Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, Manhattan Beach Chamber 360. On July 27th, 2018, live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. That's what we do here in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and it's a beautiful place to do just that.
The South Bay Show is brought to you by the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce. The Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce has been serving the city of Manhattan Beach for over 60 years, and they are dedicated to promoting a strong local economy by supporting the community, providing valuable business connections, and representing business with government. The Chamber staff is focused on providing its membership with the tools and resources to help businesses grow and thrive within the community. Their goal is to continually support the individual efforts of business as they work to support the growth of the local economy. For more information on how the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce is working with member businesses and the City of Manhattan Beach to support that growth, visit the website at manhattanbeachchamber.com or call 310-545-5313.
I'm your host, Joe Terry, and you can read all about our many adventures on Facebook at facebook.com/ The South Bay Show. Persistence, passion, principle, and purpose, that's what we talk about here on The South Bay Show. Joining us today as producer and co-host, president and CEO of the Manhattan Beach Chamber, Mr. Mark Lips. And, of course, with us because of our great partnership with SouthBayByJackie.com and executive producer of the South Bay Show, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, Mark, how are you guys doing today?
Happy Friday, Joe.
Excellent. It's Friday. We love Friday. We love doing the show on Friday mornings.
So I had half the United Nations left my house this week, so the Italians went home.
Oh.
Yeah, I still have France and Russia in the house, and France was really missing their food, so we took them to Dominique's Kitchen for a little French cuisine, right?
What was their report on the quality?
Well,
of
the thing is, France wanted Russia to try escargot, and of course, Russia had no idea what that was, and I said, "Well, those are snails," so. Didn't go over too well, but he did take one bite, and he's pretty picky. He's finicky, unless it's beef in a soup. I don't think or beets. That's the Russians. I will tell you, the food to me, it's like prison food. He said he was missing breakfast. I said, "What do you usually have for breakfast?" And he says, "Borscht," and I guess borscht is a
beet soup.
Beet soup. For breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
He loves it. So we're having a brunch on Sunday, a birthday brunch for my nephew, and so we're going to have some borscht there for him. So,
I imagine Tammy will make it. Oh, duh, right?
Well, she might make it. I don't know. She said to make a good borscht is pretty time-consuming, so she may go and buy it. Yeah. Yeah,
right.
So
right.
She may go just buy it because she's got other stuff she's working on. So, but anyway, we just wanted him to have some borscht. And then I said, "Well, what do you have for lunch? Soup?" And I said, "Well, what's for dinner?" And he mentioned this dish. And I said, "What is that?" And he said, "It's a soup." And it's like, wow, everything. So I want to take the French. I want to take these guys and go to a Russian restaurant, which we may do Monday night. And I'm trying to find something. I said, "So what is a soup you would like your French counterpart over here to try?" And he said, "Fish head soup." And I said, "Well, there we go. Perfect."
Yeah.
And we got to find a Russian restaurant that's serving fish head soup. So.
Okay. So what were the remarks on Dominique's Kitchen?
Oh, they liked it.
The Frenchness. That's what
the Frenchman, Pierre he was in heaven because he had all the things. I mean, there was a pâté, he had the beef bourguignon, whatever you call it, escargot,
bourguignon.
And,
bourguignon and escargot.
Beef bourguignon and the escargot and all of that. It was awesome. So, you know.
You know what's interesting is as Americans, because we are a melting pot and we grew up in ethnic neighborhoods,
I'm the one who told you that.
I'll give you credit for that. But the funny thing is we're used to a smorgasbord of different types of food. When you go to places
Swedish.
Like Italy, I know that was probably a bad analogy, but when you go to Italy, it's Italian food all day every day. You know, when you go to France, it's French food all day every day. You know, you go to Russia, it's Russian food all day every day, and it's so funny because years ago my mom and I took my mom. It was her first trip to Italy. And we were doing the three big cities. We were doing Rome, we were doing Florence, we were doing Venice. We spent a week in each city. And about 3 or 4 days into Rome, I said to her, I said, by the way, Mom, I said, Florence and Venice don't have as many food options as Rome does. I said, so if you're getting tired of Italian food, this is the place. If you feel like Chinese or, you know, or if you feel like something else. You know, you want to eat something else, this is the place to do it. And she said, no, I'm fine. So we get to Florence the next week, and 2 nights into it, she says, I'm in the mood for some Chinese. And I'm like, oh, boy, here we go. But because we're used to that. You know, we go out, we have Thai food one night, we have Mexican food one night, you know, and after 10 days of eating Italian food, so she's like, you know, I think I'm in the mood for a little Chinese. And wouldn't you know it, I actually found a Chinese restaurant in Florence. All right, now here's the funny part. Yeah. The owners and the staff were Indian. All right, so my mother and I are eating Chinese food, and I'm speaking Italian to an Indian waiter, or I'm ordering Chinese food in Italian to an Indian waiter. So I guess they're getting a little more cosmopolitan over there.
Well, the thing is, it's just like in Paris and some of the places. You know, one of our chamber members, Black Flower, the food truck.
Yes,
they were successful restaurateurs in Paris. And one of the things they were very successful with there was they opened up a pizza place. I mean, it became internationally famous. It was called the Pink Flamingo or the Pink whatever, Pink Pizza or something. And, you know, when you – and they said another thing that was became super popular in Paris was there was a food truck of Texas barbecue. So, you know, when you get out of the norm, those people have the same sort of curiosity and taste that we do, and they would like to try something different too, just like we, you know, want to go someplace different. You know, it's not always hamburgers every night. But it is, like you said, it is one of – there's two glaring things I've noticed since having the United Nations there. One is the amount of food Americans are pushed onto Americans in servings.
Yes.
I mean, my guys, when we go out to eat, they cannot finish the whole plate. We put so much food out, and, you know, we've grown up being supposed to be members of the Clean Plate Club when we were kids, not so much now, but members of the Clean Plate Club, finish your meal before you can get dessert, and then people say in the restaurants, oh, you got to try that restaurant. Say a really nice big servings or big helpings or something, like you're going whoa. And then the other thing that I've noticed is we're a melting pot. You know, I started thinking, okay, maybe would you guys like to try some? Oh no, that's Italian. How about that's French. That's, you know, so all the things that we say, okay, let's make a pasta dinner tonight, or let's make tonight will be Taco Tuesdays, or we're really a melting pot. We don't have, I mean, we have some things. Some people will say
speaking
anything
of a
on
melting
Thanksgiving
pot,
is an American dish, right?
I would love to talk to our guest about that.
We have a guest
that we should get. We have a guest. And I'm sure he can give us a few syllables on the Italian-American experience here in America. Jackie, who's our guest today?
Okay, so our guest this morning, we have a returning guest, Manhattan Beach City Council member Steve Napolitano. Steve is a lifelong resident of Manhattan Beach, and he served as senior deputy to 4th District Supervisor Don Canabi and represented Supervisor Canabi throughout the South Bay and beyond, overseeing several county departments and special assignments addressing issues across the 4th District and L.A. County. Now, prior to working with Supervisor Canabi, Steve was the youngest person elected to the Manhattan Beach City Council in 1992 at the age of 26. He served as mayor and council member and was overwhelmingly reelected in 1997 and 2001 before being termed out in 2005. Now, while serving on the city council, Steve worked as a part-time teacher as he put himself through law school, graduating from Loyola Law College and passing the bar in 2000. He then joined a local law firm specializing in education and municipal law, where he represented clients throughout the state on a wide variety of issues. Steve is also the host of Talk About LA, a video series spotlighting South Bay restaurants so as to inform both residents and visitors about the incredible eateries right here in our backyard. So, Mark, we have a bunch of different topics we're going to discuss with Steve today. So let's get to it.
Well, first of all, hi, Steve.
Welcome back to the program, Steve.
Oh, my God. I told you guys to cut down that bio. I got to update that thing.
Yeah. Hey, because I don't think you had the years 7 through 18 in there. But the what we failed to mention, Jackie, is he's mayor pro tem right now. So he will be sitting in the hot seat, what is it, September?
Yeah. Uh-huh, September.
Yeah. So the switch will happen in September. And I will say he's also, there's a little plug for the chamber. He's agreed to, since this is the NBC 360 Chamber show, so he has agreed to open and introduce and say a welcome remarks for our the Heroes of Manhattan Beach, which will be October 17th, where we're going to honor our first responders, public works, and volunteers. But, Steve, what I want to know is, you know, everybody knows Steve Napolitano, the you know, for lack of a better term, politician or you know.
Man about town,
Don Canabi.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I still, you know, I hear you grew up in Manhattan Beach, right?
Yes, sir. I am a native.
But, I mean, you grew up right here in Manhattan Beach.
Yes, mm-hmm. All my life.
Wow. So what, and, I, you know, I don't want to get into your age, but so the whole, there's a real vested interest
Let's get to the question so he can talk.
Well, I know that. But that's what I'm asking. So you've got a vested interest in the small town appeal because you grew up here. What is the main, what is other than larger houses, what is the biggest difference you see from when you were running around as a kid to right now?
Well, of course, the influx of money. It was a very middle-class place when I grew up there. And the property values of lots of renters, smaller homes. I mean, if you were a teacher, you could afford to buy a house there. Five to tens live there. A lot of people, you know, it was basically built off the aerospace industry nearby with Northrop Grumman and TRW and a bunch of others that were in business at the time. So very middle class. You know, my friend growing up there, we had nothing special. And then going to high school, no one, you know, just a few people had cars. Most of us rode bikes or walked there. And now I see that the parking lot's full all the time. So money has certainly come into Manhattan Beach, and that's had its blessings, and it's had a few drawbacks too. But, you know, the thing that's always been special about it is the people, and the people who come to Manhattan Beach come for a particular reason. They appreciate the special nature of it, and I think that they become part of it. And I think that's great.
Awesome.
I just wanted to throw out there my first experience with Steve Napolitano was with him as a deputy for Don Canabi. In 2014, I was Firewood Joe, and I sold a great deal of firewood at Dockweiler Beach. Do you remember, Steve?
I do remember, Joe. I do remember.
you were amazing, man. I mean, you were tough. You gave, you know, the line, the wishes of the county.
I was honest.
Yeah. You were
Wait,
honest.
You were
I
remember you burning the Christmas trees, but you were selling wood?
I think we changed county policy because for a couple years running, I had 40 plus trees that we burned on a single night, which means they saw it from space, is what I'm saying. They
the
saw
wall,
it
yeah.
from space. Yes, indeed. And Steve and I corresponded multiple times during 2014, and they instituted policies that I feel were somewhat motivated by the influx of quote unquote professionals moving in and selling firewood and increasing firewood availability on the beach, and so they instituted policies for safety reasons, and also there were a lot of people having these huge kind of out of control parties. And they were trying to control that and so forth. But
fueled
you were
by
great.
A large bonfire of Christmas trees.
Yeah.
Well, one of
he
the issues
was, honest,
was just what they were burning.
Fair.
I mean, they were burning, painted doors
right.
and things like that.
Really?
Oh,
my gosh.
Gosh.
Right. Going into
oh,
the air.
Yeah.
So, firewood's
stupid
a much
stuff.
Better
yeah.
alternative to
yeah.
some of the stuff they were burning.
Yeah. You were not in an
yes,
emerging
exactly.
business there, by the way, Joe. That was not an emerging business.
No. No, no. And so I just wanted to say for everyone to know that in 2014, 4 years ago, my first kind of anonymous interaction with Steve when he was working for Don Kanabe as a bureaucrat who was actually trying to help this guy he did not know, Firewood Joe, when Firewood Joe's asking him for, essentially help in navigating county policies and procedures and so forth. So from that point forward, I've always had a special view of what you try to do in public life. So my first question, and I don't like long questions. What is your concept of your role as a public servant? Tell me about that.
I could go on for a long time, but basically it boils down to I want to make a difference. I love solving problems. That's what I do. And whatever the problem is, I work it till it comes to some resolution. But it's helping people, serving others, making a difference, improving people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? What is the most significant contribution you think you've made to date?
Well,
for Manhattan Beach.
I mean, nobody does anything alone, but I think that we've been able to do a lot of stuff over the years. It's hard to choose in one. I really, not on city council but at the time, but I really am proud of the role I played in getting our library built, the new library built, because that came through a lot of different things had to get done and pushed through to make that happen. Not everybody was ready to go forward on it or wanted to pursue it. And at the county, those bureaucrats that you were talking about. So I was able to solve some problems and get it done. And very proud of that. Some of the other things I think that we can point to is just creating more open space. Buying the park space along Marine Avenue. I was on the council when we did
That's
that.
That's what I was going to ask. Were you responsible for Marine
there?
Fields?
Well, I was one of five
right.
council members, and we worked together to get that done. The Metlocks project is another one. That was a 10-year
right.
process with the Daily Breeze, and an editorial said it was a textbook case of how the process should work. And we went through a very long public process, but I think what came out of it was very good. Even some of the folks who were opposed to the concept at the time, now are down there. I see them in the plaza enjoying it very much, and I think it's a great asset, a great anchor to downtown.
It's
you
always
know,
it's
you know,
always
me.
Point. I'm Jackie. I'm gonna go to you next, Jackie. But the it's always important to point out for people in a public forum that the Metlocks Plaza essentially a toxic site with potentially radioactive, toxic, I don't know what you call it.
There were some
whatever
heavy metals there from the glazing
heavy
from the pottery.
But the key
all,
is this.
All removed.
It's a national success story about a small town taking a site that was, I don't know if people remember what it was like. It was like a prison yard or just like a desolate wasteland for 30 years.
It was a hole in the ground.
It was a hole in the ground.
A hole in the ground for 30 years, Steve? How long was it?
No, it was the mid-80s. It closed down in
okay.
the late 80s.
20 years.
It's at
20 years.
It was, talk about a story there. I mean, it all came about basically. There was a lawsuit called the Farcore lawsuit, guy sued us on behalf of some families regarding the railroad right of way and the fact that the train had stopped running and the city bought the land. Actually, there was a reverter clause going back to the original Spanish land grant that if the railroad ever stopped running on it, would revert to the family that owned it before, and that's what he claimed, and we lost on the Superior Court level, the appeals level, and finally went to the State Supreme Court, and we won that. And because Santa Fe had to indemnify us for that, we made a deal with them. Instead of paying our legal fees to us, in exchange for legal fees that we put out, we bought the front half of that, and then we were able to purchase the back half by a holding company and put that together. And, some people wanted the park, some people wanted to put the new library there. We went through a lot of different iterations, came up with a development plan, and like I said, I think everyone enjoys it at this point.
From now forward, anyone associated with the property should be, lauded, and a statue should be erected for people, because that is one heck of a wonderful thing. You see the kids
I'll
there every day playing. Oh my God! What a town square.
And that's a testament also to the partnership
Jackie.
We had with the Tolkien Group who put that together.
Mm.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The businesses
well,
we have some great operators now.
Well, what I wanted to mention, the first thing you mentioned, Steve, was the library. And it's so interesting to see how that unfolded, because when the internet really became, when it was out there, when everybody began using it, people believed that libraries, a depository for books, people believed that libraries were going to go the way of the dodo, right? What's the sense in having a big building taking up space with all these books that people can get online, right? But the Manhattan Beach Library and the Redondo Beach Library, there are a couple of them locally. They've become great examples of how a library can remain, how a library can adjust their functionality to remain a vibrant part of the community. The library functions on so many levels now.
I was a library deputy for Supervisor Calvi, among many other things I did for him. I oversaw libraries, and we had a chunk of money, and no one knew what to do with. And I said, let's build new libraries, let's remodel some old ones. And, we looked at the figures. Some people in our office said, hey, what are you talking about, libraries? Who's using libraries? We checked in with the libraries, well, we're using the library ever, and they still are. You got the internet access there, you got multimedia, you got the computer, you got the community rooms, the kids reading, kids storytelling time in Manhattan Beach is the biggest of all the libraries in the county. So it made total sense. And the situation in Manhattan Beach was unique because we used to have two county libraries, actually, where the Manhattan Art Center is, that used to be our second library. And because that closed due to budget cuts in the 90s, and that was a sad decision to make, but to let that go. But when it did close, our tax money that was still going to the special library district was generated, and because of the council at the time I was on, we worked a deal with the county to set that money aside just for Manhattan Beach, which generated about $1 million in additional funds a year above what the cost of our other library, our downtown library, cost. So we were able to bank that money And then the succeeding councils were able to bond it to build the library down there now.
It's unbelievable.
And more people use it than ever. And there's a fireplace on the second floor.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. The place is humming. It's humming with activity all hours of the day. They have late nights at the library. It's really unbelievable. You go in there, you have an area where there are these individual tables where people are sitting there, you know, they're having coffee, reading their tablet or kids. It's unbelievable how successful. It's fantastic how successful that library is.
Well, they've transformed. Libraries have transformed into community centers. You have homework hours there. You've got people helping tutor, story time, like I said. Mm-hmm. They show movies there. They have gatherings. We had a great gathering the other night regarding the founders of the Roundhouse and the story behind that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a great community resource.
Yeah, I think that's the mission going in with libraries. It's got to become a community center, and that's what ours has become. We do our seminars there. We actually wish it opened at 9 o'clock versus 10 o'clock. You know, when was the last time you wished the library opened earlier? And we hear people saying that all the time. So, my son used to go there and study simply because of the new library, because he just loved the atmosphere and the quiet, but still to look out and see the ocean and all of that. So,
right.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. So now, Steve, I don't want to change the subject necessarily, but I do want to talk a little bit about, you're a young guy. You've had exposure to, most people don't know. No, you are. You are a young guy when it comes to politicians. And we talk about this some, you know, we have an aging at the national level. Oh, my God. There needs to be some new blood, and you know, at the local level, it's a beautiful thing. But the key is this, Steve: you are a young guy with great credentials. You served with Don Kanabe, regarded as one of the great supervisors in the county architecture. You know, most people don't know, but the county of Los Angeles has a budget larger than I think 25 states. I mean, the county of Los Angeles is a big deal.
It has a budget larger than most nations.
Mm-hmm.
It has a $3 billion budget. It would be the eighth largest in the nation based on population.
And you've been in the halls of power at the county of Los Angeles. Now, you've brought that expertise and that you know, calm, you know, sort of focus to Manhattan Beach. Are you going to stay, or do you have higher ambitions?
Well, I mean, define higher ambitions, because I often wonder what's being gained a lot of times in our partisan politics, especially these days. I don't need to expound on that because everyone else is. But I take a very nonpartisan approach to things. Like I said, I'm a problem solver, so that's why local government is perfect for me. And I was very thankful and honored and privileged to be able to come back to serve on the Manhattan Beach City Council after being off for 12 years, having served 3 terms before. So I'm just happy to participate and to help lead the city in what I'm doing now, and we'll see what happens in the future. But I don't have any plans going forward at this point. I'm just focused on Manhattan Beach and everything that we need to do to make that the best place that we can. That sounds like a very political answer, but you know, people have asked me, hey, run for assembly, run for Senate. But then you're one of 80 assembly members, one of 40 senators, and everything gets diluted, and the party tells you what you can vote for and what you can't vote for, and they sit down. And if you don't do what they say, and then they run someone against you and run you out of town. That, to me, just isn't the way to do things. That's not how you solve problems. You know, that's how you get power and keep power, not how you solve problems.
Well, I think being on city council definitely would be, to me, because of the bureaucracy in Sacramento and all of that, it would certainly be more rewarding. You know, it's kind of like the NFL coach who goes and begins to coach college. I mean, they find that sometimes much more rewarding than it was when they were coaching in the NFL.
It is
because, you know,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. The local government's the most rewarding thing that I've ever done. And I'll tell you, no one's getting rich off it. Certainly not Manhattan Beach City Council, but it is the most rewarding thing that I've done.
Hmm. I like it when you talk about, because it's a part of our history that people take for granted, especially if you're new here. But that I'm not sure people are aware that of your impact that you've had in, like you said, Matlock's. People go and enjoy that every day, and yet they don't realize the angst, the all of that went into making that happen, how close it came to not happening, or becoming something else. And then of course the Marine Fields we all coached on, and just the whole history of how that happened, but also the domino effect as it relates to the Manhattan Beach Studios and all of those things that were all part of the in play there. I mean, it's interesting. I see more big things back then, and now I don't know, what are the big ticket? Is it more nuanced now? What we're doing in the city?
It's not nuanced. Well, a little bit. I mean, we've come out of recession, and no city had really a lot of fun too much of any big thing during the recession during the last several years. But now that we're out of that and things are better, we're getting back to some of our nuts and bolts things. I mean, we've got a fire station 2,
right,
across the Falls of there, and we need to replace that. It was built in the 50s. It's fallen apart, but I don't want to be too dire about it. It's totally functional for what it is, but we need to have that so that it accommodates both the male and female firefighters. And we need to upgrade it seismically to make sure that if there is an event, that it's not going to fall down and be part of the problem, that it's going to help be part of the solution if there is a major event that we responded to. So that's one of the things. I think what I've learned along the way in Manhattan Beach is that the city and the voters typically like things in smaller bites. We've come up with some grand plans before about redoing all of our facilities and redoing all this and all that, but usually they've been rejected. And I think that what people look for, they want to know what they're getting for their money, and they want to know that it's of value and that it's important and needs to be done, and there's not some other way to do it. So, I think right now, facility-wise, we're focused on the fire station. There's certainly other places that we need to upgrade. I'd love to upgrade the community centers at Joslyn and at Manhattan Heights. Those need to be upgraded. The art center, it's a round building, not very useful in a lot of ways. It's nice, but we certainly have an emerging arts community in the city, and so that could be improved upon. So I think, though, we take it as they come, and, of course, public safety being the highest priority for government, we need to tackle the fire station.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Joe, you want to do that station break real quick?
Yes, indeed. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the South Bay Show, and we're having a wonderful conversation with one of our own, a native of Manhattan Beach. You don't find them very often here in the South Bay. There are a few of them around. It's a great conversation because we're talking with someone who's really bringing a lot of focus and experience to local government that you just don't see very often. It's refreshing, and it's a wide-ranging discussion. We're going to try to discuss a whole bunch of things in the back half of the hour, and also get some idea of his future plans for the city and some of the things that are out there right now that the city is dealing with. So we're back.
Yeah, and
so
you mentioned
Steve,
I'll just mention too that we're all looking forward to the completion of the Harrison Greenberg aquarium remodel at the end of the pier there at the roundhouse. The Harrison Greenberg Foundation made an incredible donation to the city, and working in conjunction with us, the city put in some dollars, and we're redoing the infrastructure out there while they're redoing the interior and redoing the oceanographic teaching station out there, which is visited by just thousands of kids a year. So we're all looking forward to that, and we expect that to open again in September.
That's exciting.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
You know, the thing
that
I'm coming up that you know we're going to have to wrestle with? I mean, I know you guys, it's got to be on your radar. Well, I know it's on your radar, and it's certainly on our radar here, but is the whole bike sharing, dockless bikes, all of that that we're seeing on all the beach cities all around us. It seems like, speaking of problem solving, it seems like we could talk to the hotels and get them to set up a bike rental for our visitors rather than just with their guests. Maybe they could operate the bike rental out of their hotels, but you bring them back. They're not dockless. I mean, what do you think about that?
As far as the bicycles go, we really haven't seen that big of an influx. I've sat down with these folks, some of the companies, and talked to them, Lime and others. And regarding the bikes, I directed them towards the hotels because the reality is people who already live in the beach cities have a bike who want to ride a bike.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of the locals are going to rent a bike to ride around, but it is something to offer visitors. And I could see easily having bikes available outside of our local hotels rather than them maintaining their own, which some of them do. This is a great alternative, and they can have some profit sharing arrangement.
Right.
I think what the real issue less with bicycles right now is, and more with the scooters.
Scooters.
Right. The Bird and the Lion scooters.
Scooters.
El Segundo has a pilot program, and what we're seeing as a result of that and a few other areas is that people who are picking up there and riding them into Manhattan Beach and in Formosa Beach, I've seen on the sidewalk where they shouldn't be. I've seen them on the strand where they shouldn't be. One person, one of my colleagues, even saw one in a rearview mirror coming up on them in on the Fallsville.
Mm-hmm.
Lord knows why anyone would risk
without a helmet,
with helmets, things like that, with no helmet, breaking the rules, breaking the laws, and it's just something. I've spoken with some of the groups. They don't have business permits to operate out of Manhattan Beach right now. It's one of these things that we're going to have to talk about, but we're also looking at what other cities are doing. And just the other day, Beverly Hills banned them for 6 months because of all the violations that's
right.
taken place.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's one thing. I know how they operate. You put your credit card, you download the app and everything, and you sign all these waivers saying, I won't ride where I'm not supposed to, I won't ride double. But everyone does it. I've seen it. I've seen people riding double. I've seen people going through lights. I've seen no headgear, no nothing, and on the sidewalks, like I said, which is a danger to themselves and others. And so we're just going to have to deal with these things as they come and see if we can come to some understanding with the companies and with the folks who use it as to, these are great new innovative ways to get around town, but there are rules that have to be followed for their safety and others. And, leaving them in the middle of sidewalks, not riding on sidewalks. It's just we're going to have to find a better way to address that than just dumping these things in the city and saying, have at it, folks.
Well, what's interesting is
El
Segundo, it was the tail wagged the dog there, from what I understand. It was the company came and dropped 100 scooters off in the middle of the city. People began riding them, and then they went and asked for a business license, which prompted El Segundo to create some sort of a pilot program.
Well, in my discussions with the companies, I've discouraged that because I said, if anyone dumps a bunch of scooters here on the street, don't be surprised if they're dumped off the end of the pier, because we're just going to impound them if they're not where they're supposed to be. And come and talk to us, cooperate with us. But if you're going to try and force their hand, it's not going to be good for either of us. Let's work together.
Right. I would love to, I now work, Steve, I now work in Culver City, and you see these scooters everywhere. And I'll call out the company because they're in talks with cities all over Southern California. Bird, B-I-R-D, Bird uh-huh. Electric Scooters. And the thing about them is that you can just drop them off wherever you go. You just drop them off and sort of lean them up against the building, and other people pick them up. And now they've instituted this very interesting possibility where, you know, people, employees of the company pick them up and charge them on a regular basis, but they also allow you to take them home. You could five scooters home and charge them at home overnight and actually get paid to charge them. It's
I've heard that,
It's a beautiful thing if you're just thinking about it from the technology, you know, wow, that's cool kind of thing. But from a city point of view, I'm sure that there's lots of issues that you want addressed in terms of who's charging them, when, where.
Yeah, and the bottom line for us is safety and just making sure that people use them are safe, people around them are safe, because, you know, it's going to be a short-lived experiment if there's a bunch of lawsuits over injuries. And, you know, the thing about Manhattan Beach right now is we're trying to re-engineer ourselves and encourage the use of bike lanes, but we have narrow streets. We don't have lots of room to put in a lot of dedicated, set-aside bike lanes that only bikes are and allowed for the scooters to use as well. So that's one of the things to try and encourage. As someone said, though, it seems to be less a substitute for driving than it is a substitute for walking, which I found interesting.
Yeah.
Which I've also, by observation, is kind of true. I would love, you know, I think it'd be wonderful if everyone had electric bikes. They got the cars off the road, but that just isn't the reality.
Right.
I think that is, you know, bikes are more for long-term transportation, long-distance transportation. But the scooters seem to be, well, it's going to take too long to walk there, so I'm going to take the scooter instead.
Well, the other thing with the scooters is I have an electric bike, and the thing has changed my life. Steve, it's changed my life because I use that. I have a hair appointment. I have a nail appointment. I'm going to meet somebody for lunch. I'm on the bike. I'm not taking my car out of the garage. The other thing is that I use it for small errands. If I just have to go to the grocery store to just pick up one or two items, I take my bike. You know, I have a basket on it. You can have saddlebags. A scooter, you can't really pick up your dry cleaning with a scooter. You know what I mean? So I don't know.
I hope you have two hands on the handle.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know that the scooter is as functional as an electric bike. But we're moving on to the next topic because I got to ask you about this. I had to pick up my husband from the airport the other day, and coming through El Segundo, I saw a big sign across PCH saying Sepulveda Boulevard is now Pacific Coast Highway. So the city of El Segundo has changed the name of their main artery, and then Manhattan Beach is still called Sepulveda. Where are you guys on that? Where's the city council on that?
You know, it's funny you ask, because it's coming back on our next meeting. Richard Montgomery, Councilman Montgomery, has asked that it be brought back and discussed. We're going to talk about it there. You know, for myself, I don't have a lot of strong feeling on it, except that, you know, of the top 1,000 things that we need to deal with in the city, I'm not sure this one makes the list. It's basically in El Segundo, it's been pushed by one company and a couple individuals at that company, and that's fine. I understand it. I don't know that highway is that much more of an attractive name than Sepulveda Boulevard. I think I'd rather have a boulevard going through my town than a highway. And, you know, I'm a traditionalist in a sense, and I don't see that this is going to make life incredibly better for anybody by changing the name. So, like I said, of all the things that we need to do, this isn't high in my priorities.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, at PCH, you know, has kind of a, you know, history concept to it. You know, Pacific Coast Highway, it's like a beachy thing. Whereas when I think of Sepulveda Boulevard, I think of the West Side, you know. So, it's not, as you said, it's nothing of great importance. It's not going to change anybody's life. But it's, you know, it's along the lines of having name recognition, identifying, you know, an area more. But, yeah, no, I get that it's not at the top of your hit list.
Well, I mean, and if you look it up, right, Sepulveda is the longest street in the county from end to end, and it's called all sorts of things along the way. There's no consistency there. A lot of streets don't have consistency. I mean, we've got, Hirondo turns into 190th Street. You know, Artesia is different things. Artesia turns into Gould in Hermosa Beach. So it's all over the place, and people just they accommodate and they get used to things and just live with it. And Dan Dennis, our town historian, came out with a book just recently on Sepulveda, called Sepulveda. And I don't know what that's going to do to her book sales, but again, I kind of see it as a solution to a problem.
Well, you know, it's interesting. When you read Jan's book, which is a thread in the tapestry of time, the history of Sepulveda in Manhattan Beach, it's pretty fascinating. But it also, it's not a name change. You know, there has been precedent because before it was PCH, it was El Camino Real. And
it was one of many El Camino Reales.
Yeah. And
yeah.
Right, exactly. And then in the 30s, it became Sepulveda. You know, there have been name changes, but it is, you know, it's something like, I don't know. You can argue both sides. I don't know that the of course, I've got to be careful here because I'm also with the chamber, but or I am the chamber. I mean, this is the chamber's radio show. So, but there are there's many schools of thought, or a few schools of thought. One is that PCH gives it, we're a beach city, and this really speaks to the fact that we're a beach city, so Pacific Coast Highway, even though it's a mile from the beach. But the other
I'm
is...
I'm pretty sure having beach in the name Manhattan Beach kind of solves that issue too, though.
Yeah, yeah. and right, exactly. And but I'm just saying, that's, if you talk to those businesses you're talking about, then the other is just the logistics of, you've got one business that could end up with an address on Pacific Coast Highway and shared with an address on Sepulveda. So there's logistics from a GPS, internet standpoint, going from El Segundo to Manhattan to Hermosa.
Right, and Skechers is you know, going to cover both Hermosa and Manhattan there, but it's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
You can afford to buy a property to get a bunch of new offices
and Manhattan. It's not... Well, and also, it's not like that Skechers, since you brought out the name, it's not like that Skechers is a store. I mean, you don't, it's not a retail, I don't think. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's all offices and designer rooms, showrooms, right?
Not on Sepulveda.
So,
yeah,
on
no,
Sepulveda.
Offices on Sepulveda. Yeah.
And then, of course, is the historical. I mean, this was, if you read Jan's book, too, which I learned more about than I didn't know that. And I'm a historian at heart, is that this was the Sepulveda Ranch. I mean, this was this area.
Yeah.
So.
And then we won't be able to make fun of anyone who says Sepulveda.
Right, exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh, let me tell you something. I pronounced it like that the first couple of years I lived out here because I went to school with a brother and sister, and they were Sepulveda. And I pronounced it like that for a couple of years. Yeah, yeah. I didn't know that.
Then,
all right.
Then someone really bent my ear, a business bent my ear the other day, saying that, it became that silo, beach silo or entrepreneurialism of we're our own city. Why should we follow suit with what anybody else does? We should be our own people. You know, let's not change the name just because others are changing it. So there's that kind of thinking as well.
As
you've got small businesses that are saying this will create a hardship for them to change their letterheads, business cards, all of that stuff, business license, address. You know, my solution to that was, which I suggested to council, was maybe we give them a waiver for their business license fee and allow them for 1 year to put that towards the cost.
I'm glad you're generous with our waivers, Mike.
Yeah, so that's the thing.
We'll take the chamber budget.
I'm very good about spending your money, Steve.
Yeah.
Well, Mark, there were several other topics that you wanted to touch on. Where do you want to go next?
You
want to talk about list? Do you want to talk about short-term rentals?
I don't know that we need to hash. I mean, we've pretty much beat up short-term rentals. We know what's happening there, and there's a lot of, it's just. I like what San Diego did personally. I San Diego just approved, owner-occupied only, business license, registration, all of that. They didn't put a four-month window on it or anything like that. That helps your local businesses. It helps it, socially. It help, you know, it's pro-social with people who need it on fixed incomes for whatever reason, hardship reasons. But yet it keeps the developers from having to being able to come in and buy a house. But then again, which Steve knows, then you have the Coastal Commission and all their wants and needs for everybody to be able to come to the beach. So if Steve wants to speak to it, I'd love, you know, that's great.
Well, I think, you know, as I said before, my concern with short-term rentals really is it's the impact on the fabric of the community, you know, mm-hmm. basically putting transients above residents in residential areas that are zoned and people bought and expected to own the property in a residential area. So you mm-hmm. come with certain expectations that go along with that. And so I just, you know, my concern is the impacts there. And I also just, you know, it all boils down to the money. The other redeeming values of this, I don't know. But, you know, if this is something that we're going to do, I just want to make sure that we do it right, we do it thoughtfully, and that we figure out all the impacts. And, you know, my concern, too, though, with whatever regulations, where if you put in too many regulations, you know, just force things underground as they are now. I've gone on to Airbnb, Maine, and, you know, it says 130 places in Manhattan Beach, but look at the corresponding map, and they don't show any. And you also look at what's listed there. Nothing looks like it. It says beach adjacent. A lot of them are by LAX or other places. So I don't know how many are, you know, this real problem with the current ban. I know that some people want this. But, you know, I just wonder how many problems we're going to just shift. You know, the problems that people say that we have with enforcing a ban, we're just going to exchange those with other problems that are going to be a cat and mouse. And we're going to need more staff to do enforcement and do checks on these things. And it's going to be a constant battle in regards to underground operators anyway. That's just the nature of it. You know, we pass any ordinance, there's going to be 90-something percent that follow it, and there's always going to be a certain small percentage that are going to try and get around it in some way. And, you know, we see that cannabis sales across other cities, and we see that with short-term rentals, now, you know, in Manhattan Beach, Hermosa Beach, we allow them right now in the commercial areas, and we're going to do an inventory about how many units actually are available to be rented in commercial areas, and maybe we do a pilot program there. I know some people are for that, some people are against it, but we'll see how it shakes out. Now, I don't think anyone's made a final decision yet, but so far my colleagues have indicated that they're a bit more gung-ho about it than I am.
Yeah.
You know,
it's interesting. I don't think people realize that it is okay in the commercial zone. I think that's new news for a lot of people.
Yeah, and it might be. And we haven't done a big job of it because we haven't tracked anything. You know, we haven't the council prior that approved that. Nothing was put in place as far as registration, as far as DOT mm-hmm. or anything like that. It's just been allowed. So maybe that's the way that we track success in terms of registration, in terms of tax collection, in terms of enforcement. And we start off something smaller like that and expand from there. But we'll see.
Well, I just wanted to mention that, you know, anybody that knows me knows, I ride my bike on the Strand through Hermosa and Manhattan. You know, I'm all up and down the Strand all the time. I know just by eyeballing, I know which houses people live in, and I know which ones are not primary residences, and there are still a lot of those homes being rented out in both cities. You know, I know which houses sit empty, you know, and I know when they're being rented out, and so it's still going on, no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, every city is going to have to take on that challenge, you know, on their own, see what works best for them.
Well, what's
yep.
interesting is mm-hmm. I wonder if there is information out there, because I'm a big owner-occupied. That's been my stance for a long time, and I think that solves a lot of the problems. There is that issue of does it change the tone of a neighborhood? So I wonder if there is any kind of research out there to show when a city changes to an owner-occupied policy. Not developer,
okay.
Not standalone homes, not, you know, that sort of thing, but owner-occupied, they have to be there. Does
yeah,
the number
not,
of rentals increase?
Is.
Does the number increase?
Typically not. I mean, the research that's been done, there was a wide-ranging research paper that just came out, San Francisco's, and I don't know all the ins and outs of theirs as to owner-occupied or not, but you can look up that online. It's fairly easy to find. But the other thing about it just is, in terms of research, every city is unique, and you never know what the impacts are going to be. But,
right.
Again, do we start something small and then grow from there? But, there is a huge concern over displacement of long-term renters. In fact, Hawaii, which I've read about, has increasing homelessness there, in part because of the Airbnb. And I don't want to name just them because there are obviously other ones, but the short-term rentals. I mean, 1 out of 7 homes in Maui are short-term rentals, and 1 out of 3 in the city of Lahaina are short-term rentals.
Mm.
So
wow.
That displaces a lot of long-term residents and long-term renters. And that's the difference, and hopefully you're right. Owner-occupied, if that's true, again, still going to be an enforcement issue. But if that's truly how it operates, then it's not going to displace long-term renters. That's my hope.
Right. And I don't think, this is a residential community. I don't know how many renters we have versus homeowners. But with the owner-occupied, I'm curious, if you got rid of everything else, what you were talking about with changing the tone of the neighborhoods, because I don't really see it now. I mean, I don't see it,
Well, long-term renters are more invested in the community, right?
Yeah.
They're people who live
right.
there. They have neighbors. They contribute to the economy as well. They shop. They mm-hmm. dine. But there's a certain stability there as opposed to folks who just come in for vacation. And that those people change from week to week to week. I mean, I guess I look at it as the fable of the goose that laid the golden egg, right? I understand that everybody wants to do the best they can, but the issue of always wanting more, to kill that golden goose to see if there's more gold inside it rather than being happy with that one golden egg a day to look for more gold, I don't know if that's what we're facing here or not. So that's my concern about it.
And people have to realize the only reason this is exasperated is because of the internet. This short-term rental has been around our beach cities and our beach city for ever since I came here in the 70s. So,
In more instances than one, the internet provides the what's been called the hug of death.
Mm-hmm.
Where you love something so much you kill it.
Right? Yeah.
There was things flew under the radar. There were short-term rentals. It wasn't a big deal. But, that same can be said with running up and down Sand Dune Park, right? It was nothing until media said, hey, this is the best workout in the world. And all of a sudden we had loads of teams coming here to work out.
Yep. 1994, Sports Illustrated magazine promoted Sand Dune Park. And from then on, it was all issues. And now it's all fenced in.
The double-edged sword of the internet.
Yeah.
Wow. There you go. Well, Joe, the hour flew by again.
Yeah.
It's time to wrap it up.
Steve Napolitano, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it, and I'm happy to come back and talk anytime.
We love having you, Steve. It's great to have you committed to Manhattan Beach leadership as you are, and we will ask you back, I'm sure. Thank you, Mark.
And thank you, Steve, too, because I've said it before, and I'm not just kissing rear ends here. It's I think this is the best council we've had in a lot of years. The best council we've had.
Thank you.
And some will say
I
the
really
best council
that.
Since when you were on with Tim Lilligren. I mean, going back, really, people in this town, we rank councils. And
yeah.
This one's ranking pretty well.
Well, I'm lucky to work with
Thank
some
you,
great
pretty.
People. My colleagues, I'll give their best for the city and stuff.
So
fantastic.
Thanks.
And, of course, I'm Mark. Did you have more?
Happy Friday, Joe.
Happy Friday, Mark. Thank you, Jackie.
By the way, I've offered discount codes for everyone in blocks. I've offered them to the city, and I've offered them to the listeners of the Manhattan Beach Chamber 360 show and any of Jackie Balestra and Joe Terry's constituents out there and the other shows.
Right.
So August 11th, it's going to be a great time. It's going to be so much fun. You know what? What I'm talking about is Bite at the Beach at the New York Street backlot of the Manhattan Beach Studios. And I'm going to have – This will bring back memories for Jackie. I'm going to have a New York Street con man working the with three card money, Michelle game, all of that.
I never fell for that. I knew better than that.
Well, no, we all knew it, and we just watched the tourists. I remember living in New York that we just watched
fun.
The tourists get fleeced with it, and they had a shill. This guy's going to have a shill too. I've got a guy.
Yeah, we have a shill.
He's going to have a shill, and just like they did in the city. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, I
fantastic.
Can't wait. This is going to be great. We're gearing up for it.
Yep. All right.
All right.
Thank you guys
wonderful
very
show.
Much.
Thanks.
Have a great weekend.
Yes, you too, Mark.
All right.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.